WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. My guest, Jim Gallopo, knows a lot about gangs. He's worked with L.A. gang members for close to 28 years, since the aftermath of the Watts riots. Gallopo is a probation officer with the Los Angeles County Metropolitan Specialized Gang Unit. He works on the streets with gang members who are on probation. Some of the conditions of probation are difficult to enforce, such as the restriction against associating with known gang members. Gallopo says he concentrates on keeping his people away from guns, drugs, and trouble. Gallopo is a physically imposing man. He's 6'1", 230 pounds, and has a shaved head. When I spoke with him last March, he told me his job has become more dangerous as gangs have gotten deeper into drugs and guns.
The nature of the gang has changed a lot over the last 25 years or so since the gang started. And basically, in the black gangs, it used to be what we call going from the shoulders, where guys would fight basically one-on-one. There could be 50 gang members from each gang there, but the two guys would go at it, and maybe a few other side fights would break out. But, you know, it was one-on-one, basically, and when one guy beat the other guy, in essence, into submission, then, you know, that was over. And there was no disrespect, you know, to lose to a guy who was that much tougher than you. Nowadays, these guys don't do that. They don't have what we call the heart anymore they used to have. And they'll go by 40 miles an hour in a van and shoot a shotgun, you know, and by the time they hit somebody, they don't even know who they hit. By the time the person hits the ground, they're three blocks down the street. So there's a lot, it's a lot less personal, there's a lot less courage, there's a lot less discipline or honor involved. And what attracted me to the gangs initially was the fact that there was a lot of honor involved. They had a code and they lived by it. Today, it's just not that way. I mean, you know, you never could used to be able to get a gang member to what you call snitch or to roll over, you know, on another gang member. Now, I mean, it's just commonplace that they will do that.
What's the age range of the people who you see? The people who are,
my youngest probationer is normally around 15 years old, which I have very few of. My oldest is in their late 30s, which I have very few of. The majority of them are between 17 and 20 years old.
The ones who are 15, are they sometimes more difficult to deal with because they're young and inexperienced?
Certainly.
What makes them more difficult? In what ways are they more difficult?
They are normally involved in an activity we call making their bones, which is trying to, you know, to gain status in the gang. And so they will do any crazy thing to try to bring themselves up in the eyes of the more high-status gang members, like drive-bys or walk-in liquor store robberies and bank robberies and all kinds of things that they'll do to try to gain status in the gang. Shoot at a police car from an apartment or a house or, you know, a corner, you know, just things that would bring them status.
How effective do you think prison is in punishing or reforming gang members?
Well, I think it's very effective in punishing, but I just see little or no evidence that there's any rehabilitation or reformation going on. I mean, you know, sometimes a guy will burn out. He'll get old enough in prison, he'll been there long enough and just say, I don't want to come back to this mess. This is a zoo, it's crazy, and, you know, no matter what I got to do, I'm not coming back here. And, but the prison system in California is, you know, I understand from colleagues around the country, everywhere else, is just a revolving door. And, you know, people a lot of times feel safer because a guy gets, you know, 8 years in the penitentiary for some heinous crime. And, you know, the guy's going to do three, you know, and get paroled, or four and get paroled. And he's back. And when they come back, they're worse than when they went in too many cases. You know, they're buffed up physically, they're stronger from lifting weights and eating well and going, you know, getting sleep and rest and exercise and all this. And mentally, they're just, you know, one of the guys who described it great to me, when you're in the joint, you got to act crazy, you know, to survive. And, you know, once you act crazy and learn the crazy way of life, again, there's a Hispanic slogan called La Vida Loca. And that is, you know, crazy life. And, you know, they learn to act crazy, be crazy, and they come back out. It's hard to get through with that.
My guest is Jim Gallopo, a probation officer with the Los Angeles County Metropolitan Specialized Gang Unit. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is L.A. probation officer Jim Gallopo. Now, you were telling us that there was more of a code when you were younger, you know, when you started working this job. And that's part of what interested you in the gangs. And
yeah.
That code doesn't really exist anymore. So what keeps you on the job?
I don't know. I'm old. You know, I've developed a relationship with gang members who are, some of them now are almost 40 years old, who are the original Crips and Bloods. And they're like a family to me. I have, you know, I'm in a unique situation, particularly being a Caucasian, that I care about them and they care about me. And we've had a long life together, and most of them should not have lived to be as old as they are by, you know, statistical inference. And their retort to me is, you certainly shouldn't have lived to be as old as you are, being down here as long as you've been. And, you know, it's true.
You're saying you're close with a lot of the original gang members.
That's right. OGs.
Yeah. Now, so is there often a turning point in a relationship that you have with a gang member where you go from being the authority figure that they do not want to deal with to someone who they trust and feel more close to?
Yeah. Every gang member that makes it with me reaches that point.
What do you mean by making it? Like they make it through probation?
They either make it to that point, or they're dead, or they're incarcerated for long periods of time. And, you know, when they come out, even some of them have come back and said, man, I wish I had listened then. I'd like to work with you. I'd like to try to help you, because these youngsters, no matter how much they respect me as a probation officer, I'm still the man, you know, and these guys are the guys that they look to like the second coming of Christ. You know, I mean, these are the guys they listen to. These are the guys they admire. These are the guys they want to be like. And when these guys can turn around and come back and say, let me tell you what it was like being in San Quentin or in Folsom, or what, you know, here's what it was like when I was knew I was when I got sentenced to the joint, and my wife came up with my kids and was saying goodbye to me at county jail before I went to the joint, and I saw, a guard or somebody pinch her on the ass or disrespect her, and I'm sitting behind, a cage and all this type of thing. And then, you know, they go into the homosexual pressure and the gang pressure and, you know, the physical violence in the penitentiary. And, you know, these guys, nobody can do it like these guys can, you know. And they tell them, you don't want to do this. You know, you do not want to have to live the life I did. And let me show you how you can still have heart and not do that.
Now, you were in gangs when you were young, right?
Well, they weren't the same kind of gangs. When I was young, they were basically car clubs that acted like the early Crips and the black gangs prior to the Crips and Bloods.
Were you ever in prison?
No.
Juvenile hall?
No.
Okay.
Jail, yes.
You were in jail, okay.
Yeah, I was in jail a number of times, but I never quite made it. I had an existential experience with a police officer and a probation officer that ultimately changed my life around when I was young.
With a probation officer?
Yeah, a probation officer and juvenile police officer in Long Beach.
What happened, and did that affect you becoming a probation officer yourself, maybe?
I guess it did.
So what happened?
Not consciously. Uh-huh. Well, I was a real delinquent when I was a kid. I was into stealing cars and fighting and breaking into liquor store warehouses and did commercial burglaries on music stores. And, you know, I mean, I was just a fast kid. My mother had multiple sclerosis and was dying since my birth. And my father was a milling machinist first at the Naval Shipyard in Long Beach and ultimately at Douglas Aircraft. And he worked He worked a swing shift so he could, you know, take care of my mother. And he'd get about 3 hours sleep, and then he'd have to get up, and he would get up and wake me up and cook me breakfast so he could be with me. You know, that's the only time we got to see each other. So I basically was on my own to do, you know, he'd go out and go to work, and I'd sneak out his car. You know, go pick up my homeboys, pick up girls, go do all this kind of stuff, drinking, using marijuana, you know, all this stuff when I was real young. And I got arrested a lot. So ultimately, one time I came to jail as usual, and you know, they called my father at Douglas, and he'd have to, you know, after he got off work, he'd have to take a bus home, get in his car, and come down and get me out, which would usually be, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning or so. And you know, the cops were, and the probation officer was there at the time when, you know, they were talking, you know, tell me what a punk I was and a little asshole and all that. And I'm telling them, "F you," and you know, "we're gonna send you up." And I'm saying, get down and do it. I ain't afraid of your jail. You know, I kind of look forward to going to camp because, you know, then that was a badge of honor, and I thought it might be a nice experience, you know. So here comes my father, who had never smoked, never drank, never womanized. All his whole social life was taking care of me and my mother, and they would go for rides when he didn't work. You know, they'd go for rides in the car, and that was his whole total existence. I was smart enough to realize at that time that I couldn't take care of my mother and without him. And the only prayer, I was raised Catholic, and the only prayer I ever said was, "Please, God, don't let this man die, you know, until I'm old enough that I could take care of my mother." And so here he came, you know, and I'd never seen the man cry. You know, he was quiet, gentle. You know, he was a man of extreme, you know, honor. And they tell him, "Mr. Gallipo, you know, we're going to have to take your son away from you. You know, he's just, you can't control him. I know you've tried everything. We know your wife is sick. But we're going to have to put him someplace where, you know, because he's just too wild and all this." And all, you know, and I looked around at my father and winked and said, "Hey, f*** them, you know, excuse me. You know, they ain't nothing. They can't hurt me. They put me in their camp. I'll be back out, no problem." And I looked at him, and he started crying. He just broke down physically and started sobbing. And I'd never seen this man. This man had been, without me knowing it, the strongest man I'd ever known. And to this date, he probably is. And I just, you know, I looked at him and realized I had done this to him. And he just broke down and started sobbing, telling him, "Look, I'll get another job, too. You know, I'll put him in a private school. I'll work all day and night to pay for it. Don't take him away. It'll kill his mother. It will kill his mother to put him, you know, away. Please don't do that. I'll do anything. I'll do anything." And all of a sudden, I realized the prayer I'm praying to God, you know, I am executing. You know, I am killing this man. I am killing this man, you know, and he's doing this kind of thing for me and my mother, and I'm out there killing him. So I just did. Then I turned around to them and said, "Hey, give me a chance, you know, and you ain't nothing, and you ain't shit, and you don't deserve to have a father like that." And I said, "Look, just give me one chance. Give me one chance. I'm not afraid to go to your jail, you know that, but please, I can't do this to them." I said, "You give me a chance," and they did. They gave me 6 months to, you know, to straighten out my act, and, you know, I went to my little gang meeting and told everybody, you know, that I was out, you know, that I loved them and that I loved the streets and the stuff we were doing, but that I just had to, you know, kind of explain the situation exactly as it occurred. And I mean, some of those guys cried, you know, and one guy came out with me. When I walked out of the meeting, he came out and said, "Hey, you know, my mother's a nurse, man. She's taking care of me and my sister alone, and I'm doing the same thing to her."
Jim, one last question. Do you ever tell the story to the gang members that you're working with?
It's hard for me, but I do. I do it, you know, when I have a case that I think really needs, you know, something, because it's still emotional. My father's been dead now for four or five years, but, you know, it's just, it is something very emotional for me to say, you know, to discuss this. And I do it, you know, it's painful for me to think back to what I had done, you know, to this man for so many years and all that. And, you know, so I don't do it frequently, but I do it when I think it's necessary, and it's usually very impressive.
Jim Gallipo, thank you so much for talking with us.
Okay.
Jim Gallipo is a probation officer with the Los Angeles County Metropolitan Specialized Gang Unit. Our interview was recorded last March. This is Fresh Air.